This is TWiT.
Zoom Go Boom. Based in San Jose, California, Zoom Video Communications, Inc. provides, as we know, a video conferencing-focused communications platform using desktop and web browser clients. So you get cloud video conferencing, online meetings, group messaging. There's also some group and private chat features in there in virtual online conferences. While all of the online conferencing systems have seen a significant jump in their usage once this outbreak of the coronavirus-driven COVID-19 disease forced virtually all physical meetings of any kind into cyberspace, for whatever reason, Zoom was the system that most caught on. Maybe it sounds fun. I don't know. Apparently, it was due to nearly instantaneous word-of-mouth spread. You know, what do you use? I use Zoom. Okay, I'll use it too. And so it went. And it's relatively easy to use. However, creating something of a stress test for Zoom, the past month has shown that it's less easy to use it securely, that not using it securely can have immediate and often embarrassing consequences, that for many purposes, it may not be practical to use it securely just because of logistics, and also some potentially serious bugs have surfaced as a consequence of the greater scrutiny which has been brought to bear. So to get some sense of scale, Zoom's usage has skyrocketed from 10 million daily users before the coronavirus last December to now 200 million daily users. So a 20-fold user increase, and that's resulted in a 535% increase in daily traffic to its download page just in the last month. The company itself went public a year ago last April, and its stock price recently peaked in mid-March at more than twice what it had been in December. So it doubled while the rest of the Dow stocks crashed in the last few months. The most apparent problem was that in the rush to move online, many of Zoom's useful security features initially went unused. As we know, adding a password to anything, especially if it's optional, makes that thing's use less simple, even though it makes it somewhat more secure. So, and passwords on Zoom conferences are optional. So early on, everything from boardroom meetings to schoolroom classes to online yoga were quickly placed online without passwords. Those organizing the meetings apparently gave little thought to the possibility that anyone would want to crash the party. And there's like a Zoom meeting code, which I guess they figured was obscure enough. But oh, what a mistake that was. Even if a password was added to a meeting, both the meeting's code and its protecting, in quotes, password must still be provided to everyone wishing to attend. So when a school district posted its Zoom-based meeting codes and passwords on their public website, stand back. The world now has a new term, Zoom bombing, and it's become a sub-industry of its own. And in retrospect, it was completely foreseeable that now we have every bored teenager now also stuck at home on the internet, just itching to cause some, and here comes my favorite word, mayhem. Ars Technica briefly summed things up last Thursday, writing, "With the coronavirus pandemic forcing millions of people to work, learn, and socialize from home, Zoom conferences are becoming a default method to connect. And with popularity comes abuse. Enter Zoom bombing, the phenomenon of trolls intruding into other people's meetings for the sole purpose of harassing the attendees, usually by bombarding them with racist or sexually explicit images or statements. Ours wrote a small sample of the events over the past few days, and they had three. An attendee who disrupted an Alcohol Anonymous meeting by shouting misogynistic and anti-Semitic slurs, along with the statement, "Alcohol is so good," according to Business Insider. Meeting organizers eventually muted and removed the intruder, but only after more than half of the participants had left. Second example, a Zoom conference hosting students from the Orange County Public School System in Florida that was disrupted after an uninvited participant exposed himself to the class. And third, an online meeting of black students at the University of Texas that was cut short when it was interrupted by visitors using racial slurs. So, you know, the typical hijinks. But a problem when you're trying to do all this online and it's possible to be have these meetings interrupted. And not only can online conferences be held on the internet, but Zoom bombing raids can also be organized using the internet's social media tools just as easily. ZDNet wrote, "The internet is rife with online communities where users can go and share Zoom conference codes and request that pranksters connect and hurl insults, play pornographic material, or make death threats against other participants in a practice called Zoom bombing or a Zoom raid." They said these Zoom bombing incidents have rapidly increased to become a favorite pastime for all the teenagers stuck in their homes during quarantines. From a niche prank that started on a derelict Discord channel, Zoom bombing, they wrote, has now spread to enormous proportions, being so rampant these days that the FBI sent a nationwide alert last week urging companies, schools, and universities to take steps to secure their Zoom channels. But as Zoom bombing became more popular, more pranksters wanted to join in the fun, and more users wanted their friends' Zoom meetings disrupted. As the old saying goes, they wrote, where there's a demand, there's always a supply. Over the course of the past week, the number of places on the public internet where a Zoom raid can be requested from a gang of bored teenagers has exploded. There are now more than 30 public Discord channels. There are at least three subreddits and multiple Twitter accounts where Zoom conference codes and passwords can be posted to be broadcast to the internet. And there are threads on at least three hacking forums where users are either sharing Zoom conference codes or techniques to discover live meetings. Some examples of Discord posts revealed by PC Magazine's reporting include, quote, "Can anybody troll my science class at 9:15? Or, "I have a class in 30 minutes that I'll send a link for." Or, "My friend's going to give me the code to her high school pre-calc class tomorrow morning." So, as I noted above, Zoom does provide for password-protected meetings. But when an entire class of teenagers at home are provided with the Zoom meeting code and its accompanying password, it's easy for any of them to post those credentials anonymously to get their virtual classroom disrupted by a friend or anybody on the internet. Now, fortunately, the Zoom system does offer some additional controls to control and prevent such disruption. Zoom offers a virtual waiting room where wannabe participants can be held, staged, and vetted before being admitted into the conference. And once all vetted participants have been added, essentially once a virtual roll call is complete, Zoom conferences can be locked to prevent anyone else from wandering in late, very much like locking the classroom door once class has begun. And it's also possible to prevent anyone other than the host from sharing their screen with the conference, which only makes sense, though it's not currently the default, since the system was originally meant to be open and friendly and collaborative. So this is what's going to have to happen moving forward. And of course, all that requires much more hands-on management. It's not nearly as simple as publicly posting the access codes and everything works smoothly. But welcome to the internet. That's the way it's going to have to be. And that's the usage side's tip. And I should mention that since I posted the show notes, I just checked with Twitter, and there's at least one person who read through this already, who's an admin at a company who is using Zoom, and gave it the thumbs up. He said he appreciated and liked everything that I had suggested. So it looks like this is good advice. So as I said, that's the usage side, which has immediately become necessary for managing the rampant abuse of Zoom meetings. Not surprisingly, as I said at the top, there were some technical some problems that have surfaced as a result of more scrutiny being brought to bear. Last Wednesday, a piece in Ars Technica stated that, quote, "Users of Zoom for Windows, beware. The widely used software has a vulnerability that allows attackers to steal your operating system credentials." They were quoting researchers, so perhaps that's what the researchers said. It wasn't exactly true, though it's definitely a serious vulnerability, or it was. It would be more correct to say that it was a credential impersonation attack. The Zoom chat window could be used to send targeted Windows users a string of text that represented a network resource on the Windows device they were using. The Zoom app for Windows would automatically convert these UNC, that's the Universal Naming Convention, strings, such as /attacker.baddomain.com/C$, C is the default share, the default Windows share for your main C drive. The Zoom app would convert these into clickable links. If the target clicked on those links in the chat, on networks that are not locked down, Zoom would send the Windows usernames and the corresponding network NTLM V2 hashes to the address contained in the link, that is, out onto the public internet, to the attacker. Attackers could then use these credentials to access those default shared network resources like Outlook servers, storage devices, whatever. And this is caused by the fact that a Windows network will accept the NTLANMAN, the NTLM hash, when authenticating a user. That leaves the networks open to SMB relay attacks that can be used to gain unauthorized access to various resources. These attacks don't require cracking the hash to reverse it to its plain text password. Replaying the existing hash is sufficient for authentication. And as I've said many times before, Microsoft has never really managed to make any of its in-house protocols secure, which is why none of them should ever be exposed to the internet. Okay, so it's worth noting that since all of this is happening over port 445, any Zoom user who is behind an ISP who is already proactively filtering the typical range of highly abused ports. I'm a Cox cable user. All of mine are filtered. So those are typically ports 25, you know, SMTP, ports 137 through 139, old school file and printer sharing, and 445, the new SMB port. Those are typically all blocked. So many home users were never in any danger. They will always have been protected from the remote exploitation of this flaw because the hacker's not able to get back in. But it's way better not to have this problem. And immediately upon having it brought to their attention, Zoom repaired and updated their client to close this hole. So problem solved. But it was there for a while and spooky. And of course, there's more. It's been revealed that Zoom conference connections are not truly end-to-end encrypted as they claim, and that Zoom is able to see all of their conference content unencrypted. I can understand this, since hosting a massive conference with true end-to-end encryption would be a bit tricky. All of the participants would need to be sharing a common symmetric key that Zoom itself didn't have access to. Obviously, that can be done, and Zoom didn't have to do it the way it did. Instead, what's happened is each conference participant's data stream is encrypted to Zoom, but decrypted there and subsequently re-encrypted to all other participants.
I think in general, that's how a conferencing system would have to work. You can't do end-to-end encryption if you're going to have a central server, right? And somebody's got to mix it.
You are able to. And apparently in some instances, theirs does. But if you turn on value-added features, then it doesn't happen. Okay, so also in subsequent research by Citizen Lab, they found that Zoom was also vague about the type of encryption being used and that the keys generated for cryptographic operations were being delivered to participants in a Zoom meeting through servers in China, even when all meeting participants and the Zoom subscribers company were outside of China. Apparently that was a mistake. They did some quick footwork and explained it away and said that it's been fixed. But it was happening for a while. And the audio and video in each Zoom meeting is encrypted and decrypted with a single AES 128 cipher used in ECB mode, which is shared among all participants. As we know, ECB mode is electronic code book. That is not a chaining cipher. Each block is independently encrypted without dependence upon anything that came before. The result is that patterns present in the plain text are preserved through encryption, which is considered to be a serious security weakness. Zoom's original privacy policy also came under criticism because it was possible for Zoom to collect extensive data about its users, videos, transcripts, and shared notes, and share it with third parties for profit. Whoops. On March 29th, Zoom tightened its privacy policy to state that it doesn't use data from meetings for any advertising, but it does use the data when people visit its marketing websites, including its homepages, zoom.us and zoom.com. Zoom's iOS app, like many apps which use the Facebook SDK, was found to be sending analytics data back to Facebook even when the user doesn't have a linked Facebook account. Zoom later removed that feature. Zoom came under the lens for its attendee tracking feature, which, when enabled, lets a host check if participants are clicking away from the main Zoom window during a call. On April 2nd, it permanently removed the attendee attention tracker function. Zoom was found to be using an undisclosed data mining feature that automatically matched users' names and email addresses to their LinkedIn profiles when they were signed in, even if they were anonymous or using a pseudonym during their call. If another user in their meeting was subscribed to a service called LinkedIn Sales Navigator, they were able to access the LinkedIn profiles of other participants in their Zoom meetings without those users' knowledge or consent. Zoom has now disabled that feature. Vice Magazine discovered and revealed that Zoom was leaking thousands of users' email addresses and photos and letting strangers initiate calls with each other. It turned out that was because users with the same domain name in their email address. Get this, Leo. Users with the same domain name in their email address, that is, using lesser-known email providers other than Gmail, Outlook, Hotmail, or Yahoo, which Zoom had special cased, were being grouped together as if they worked for the same company. Whoops. Zoom has selectively blacklisted those domains, though the whole thing seems like a bad idea to me. Last Friday, the Washington Post reported that it was trivial to find video recordings made in Zoom by searching the internet for the common file naming pattern that Zoom automatically applies to video recordings. These videos were found on publicly accessible Amazon storage buckets. It's not a biggie, since that was relying upon obscurity rather than any security, but still. Researchers have created a tool called ZWardial that searches for open Zoom meeting IDs, finding around 100 open and non-password protected meetings per hour. The good news is Zoom has been responding to each and every one of these issues quickly, and it does appear that given its existing feature set, it can be used and put to good purpose so long as tight control is maintained over those who are allowed to participate. Those, although exerting such control might be difficult for very large meetings, you know, in a typical virtual classroom, that ought to be workable. Their use of AES 128 in ECB mode is a red flag from a strict security standpoint. It basically means that Zoom implemented its own cryptographic system, which is not, you know, it's obviously to any obvious to anyone looking at it, not very secure. I can see the benefits of using ECB mode for a multi-way conferencing system. It makes things much easier, allowing latecomers to more easily join into the fray. But users should not assume that they have truly secure end-to-end encryption. Apparently, no one using Zoom really does. But with that caveat, okay, for many people, it doesn't matter. You know, for an otherwise public classroom or a yoga class, it's entirely sufficient.